Hey everybody, we're going to take a look at Luke chapter 19 and Jesus' triumphal entry into Jerusalem. We'll read to the end of the chapter. And when he had said these things, he went on ahead, going up to Jerusalem. And when he drew near to Bethphage and Bethany, at the mount that is called Olivet, he sent two of his disciples, saying, "Go into the village in front of you, where on entering you will find a colt tied, on which no one has ever yet sat. Untie it and bring it here. If anyone asks you, 'Why are you untying it?' you shall say, 'The Lord has need of it.' So those who were sent away and found those who were sent away went away and found it just as he had told them. And as they were untying the colt, its owner said to them, 'Why are you untying the colt?' And they said, 'The Lord has need of it.' And they brought it to Jesus, and throwing their cloaks on the colt, they set Jesus on it. And as he rode along, they spread their cloaks on the roads. As he was drawing near, already on the way down the Mount of Olives, the whole multitude of his disciples began to rejoice and praise God with a loud voice for all the mighty works that they had seen, saying, 'Blessed is the King who comes in the name of the Lord, peace in heaven and glory in the highest.' And some of the Pharisees in the crowd said to him, 'Teacher, rebuke your disciples.' He answered them, 'I tell you, if these were silent, the very stones would cry out.' And when he drew near and saw the city, he wept over it, saying, 'Would that you, even you, had known on this day the things that make for peace. But now they are hidden from your eyes. For the days will come upon you when your enemies will set up a barricade around you and surround you and hem you in on every side and tear you down to the ground, you and your children within you. And they will not leave one stone upon another in you, because you did not know the time of your visitation.' And he entered the temple and began to drive out those who sold, saying to them, 'It is written, My house shall be a house of prayer, but you have made it a den of robbers.' And he was teaching daily in the temple. The chief priests and the scribes and the principal men of the people were seeking to destroy him, but they did not find anything they could do, for all the people were hanging on his words." So Jesus does here in these verses what he has been speaking about in the parables since the beginning of, let's say, Luke chapter 9. He has been giving repeated parables that all have to do, most of them, with a master settling accounts with his servants, returning after a party, or settling accounts for money he's given to them, or looking for fruit from a vineyard that he has planted. All of these things were pointing, first, to this moment. Jesus himself is the returning king, come to examine his own household and to see if things have been going according to what he wanted to happen while he was gone. This is detailed in several ways. One, of course, is riding on this colt of a donkey. Now, to us, donkeys are sort of comical animals, and we don't see a lot of use for them. But in ancient Israel, donkeys were royal beasts. David's sons all rode on donkeys. Solomon, when he rode to his coronation, rode on David's donkey. So there's this connection to royalty all throughout here. And in fact, this whole scene evokes all kinds of moments throughout the history of the kingdom when various kings ascended, various kings were recognized. In particular, the story of Jehu is in the background. Now, you'll remember Jehu is a particularly violent guy who was anointed by Elisha to destroy the house of Samaria, to destroy the royal house of Ahab. And he actually rode into Samaria on a donkey and lured all of the prophets of Baal into the house of Baal, and then had the place, had all those prophets slaughtered and had the place turned into a latrine. So I think that's in the background here, which is really startling, because part of what it's saying is the house, the temple of God, has become like a house of Baal. And Jesus is coming to bring judgment on it, to bring judgment on it for turning to idolatry and not being a house of prayer that it is meant to be. In the background, too, as the people proceed to put clothes down and celebrate when they come in, they're singing pieces of Psalm 118. There's various things in Psalm 118 worth noting. One is that it says that the stone that the builders rejected has become the chief cornerstone. That's an ominous note in the celebration that refers, of course, now to Jesus. Also a very common refrain, "This is the day that the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it." I think a lot of people have taken that line to mean, today is the day that the Lord has made. Let's rejoice and be glad in it. And of course, God makes every day, and we should rejoice in every day. But the particular day that Psalm 118 is celebrating is the returning of the king. And he's gone out, he's conquered his enemies, and he's come back. So let's rejoice in the victory of the returning king. And of course, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord, that is Jesus. But we could also see all kinds of other moments in Old Testament history echoing in the background. One in particular that I think of is when David brings the Ark of God finally into Jerusalem. And it's a very festive moment where David strips himself off, much like these crowds are putting their clothes down before Jesus. And remember, in that moment, Michael saw Jesus celebrating. This is the daughter of Saul whom David married. And she says, she reviles him for what he was doing, celebrating the coming of God's presence into Jerusalem. And David says, no, I'm doing what's appropriate. And Michael never had children. I would suggest that the Pharisees are in the position of Michael. They are in opposition to this. They resist it. And they are no longer going to bear fruit because they're resisting the visitation of the king. So there's lots of celebration. But then when Jesus rounds the hill, the Mount of Olives, and looks down on Jerusalem, which I would encourage you to look up pictures of this online, it's this incredible view looking down on the Temple Mount, looking down on the temple and the city of David. As Jesus rounds that corner and looks down, he begins to weep. Now remember, Jesus didn't weep a lot in the Gospels. He wept at the death of Lazarus, but he's weeping here over Jerusalem. Why? Well, there's a few things. One, I think it evokes when Solomon was trying to kill his father David and took Jerusalem. David leaves in this very same place with his head covered, barefoot, weeping as he departs from Jerusalem. Jerusalem wants to get rid of its legitimate king, won't recognize its legitimate king. Jesus, I think, is weeping over the destruction that he knows is coming on Jerusalem because they refuse to recognize their returning king, their Messiah, in the person of Jesus. J.R.R. Tolkien actually depicted this well in the Lord of the Rings trilogy because there's a steward over the city of Gondor, the royal city, and the line of stewards were just people who were entrusted with the rulership until the true king returned. But the steward doesn't recognize the true king upon his return, and something very similar is going on here. And of course, Jesus prophesies not one stone is going to remain upon another. That probably evokes in the book of Leviticus, when a house had mildew or some kind of infection, the priests were to examine it, and after a certain period of time, if it continued to have the mildew, the house was to be torn apart stone by stone. In other words, it was worthless and couldn't be redeemed. And Jesus is saying, unfortunately, that's happened with the temple in Jerusalem. And then he goes into the city and he cleans house. He gets all the money changers out and the sacrifices. Among many things going on here, one is, I think Jesus is stopping the sacrifices, right? If the money changers stop and if those who sell the animals stop, you're not going to be able to offer sacrifices. Jesus is doing this because in the Old Testament, in many, many places, God makes it clear that he's sick of the sacrifices of his people when the things the sacrifices were meant to symbolize, holy lives, aren't in place. He's not interested in the right practices of faith and religion and worship when what they are all meant to point to, a life offered to God in deeds of love and service to others, is not there. And so he's stopping. Just stop the sacrifice. Remember when Jesus says, hey, listen, if your brother has something against you, go make it right before you worship. It's the same sort of thing. He's like, no, we got to stop this because this is not real worship. What does he do instead? Well, he teaches. He teaches the coming of the kingdom. And of course, the leaders in Jerusalem want to stop this. They want their position back. They want the worship to go on. They want the respect they were getting. But it says in the text that they can do nothing about it because the people were hanging on Jesus' every word. So imagine the situation where the leaders would like very much to stop what Jesus is doing, but they can't for the time being because everyone's hanging on his every word. So this is all about the return of the king to come and judge his house. And one application I would make for us is, of course, we know that that temple was destroyed and God moved on to a new temple, which is his gathered people, the people of God, the church that he's building, Jew and Gentile, to be a house for his habitation. But remember, in the book of Revelation, Jesus comes to examine the churches of Asia Minor in a similar way that he came to Jerusalem to examine Jerusalem. So we still live as the church to stand before Jesus, the risen one, and be examined by him. He is the returned king and the coming king. And so we're to live our lives in awareness of his coming. And again, remember all the parables, servants who fell asleep or servants who were alert doing what their master wanted. So may we discern the day of our visitation when our king will come, not just in the last day when he comes, but let us be a people who live before his examining gaze every day and find the grace in him to be busy with the things he wants us to be busy with and to be bearing the fruit that he wants us to bear. Amen.